sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, May 27. Hello again. Orion Samuelson, joined by Max Armstrong and a few other folks for our weekly visit, taking a look at the world of markets from Wall Street to the commodities. And we generally start by covering Wall Street, which had a very quiet day today, but no surprise, because ahead of the three-day holiday weekend, the first summer holiday weekend of the season, a lot of traders on Wall Street decided to make it an even longer weekend, and so they took off early, so the trading population was lighter than normal. And a lot of traders reluctant to take major positions ahead of a three-day holiday weekend. But despite the very quiet activity today, Wall Street moved higher, capped off its strongest week since March. This came after Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said that an interest rate hike would likely be appropriate, quote, in the coming months, end quote. Now, Yellen's, of course, is the most important voice in the chorus of policymakers recently suggesting the U.S. economy has improved enough to warrant some higher borrowing costs, with a growing number of investors now expecting a hike in June or July. I've always been fascinated by the Wall Street fascination with interest rate increases, because when they happen, they are very small, and really, how much of an impact do they have on the psychology of the stock market? They look at it and trade it maybe for a day or two, and then they get on with it, knowing we can't continue forever at the low interest rates we have been seeing over the past several years. So it looks now like we could see an increase at the June meeting or certainly the July meeting. And while higher interest rates choke liquidity in stock markets, according to one analyst, many investors see a potential rate hike as a vote of confidence that the struggling U.S. economy is finally finding its legs. Paul Springmeier, who is portfolio manager at the Private Client Reserve of U.S. Bank, said, "As we look at our place in the global economy, things just seem to be improving to a point where it certainly looks likely that June or July will be the next launching point." And as we took a look today at what happened on Wall Street for the day and for the week, it was a quiet day, but not a quiet week. For the week, the Dow up 2.1%, the S&P 500 gained 2.3%, and the NASDAQ advanced 3.4%, those increases capping the best week on Wall Street since March. But again, getting back to the light volume, only 5.6 billion shares changed hands on U.S. exchanges. That's well below the 7.1 billion daily average for the past 20 trading days. Some of the stocks that did get some attention today: cybersecurity firm Palo Alto down 12% after a wider than expected quarterly loss. GameStop fell 3.9% after the video game retailer forecast lower than expected revenue and profit for the current quarter. So now we wait and see, I guess, until the June meeting of the Federal Reserve to see if reality will come true, an increase in interest rates. A couple of interesting stories this week. The Ford Motor Company had a major recall of the most popular vehicle in the United States. Ford Motor said it was recalling about 271,000 Ford F-150 pickup trucks in North America to replace their BrakeMaster cylinders. The company said at midweek it was aware of 9 possible accidents with no injuries and 1 alleged injury not associated with an accident. Ford said it was possible the leak of brake fluid from the cylinder could increase the risk of a crash. And talking about recalls, Takata back in the news again this week. What a year or 2 years they're having, because they are talking now about adding more recalls for those airbags that have proven to be faulty. So, winding down this week, we take the day off on Monday. World markets will be open because Memorial Day is a U.S. holiday. But generally, when we're closed, the world, it doesn't close, but boy, it sure gets quiet. But as we look beyond Memorial Day, we'll get some more information on how well we're doing in the labor market. Friday's jobs data will be the highlight of the week. We'll get that report from the Labor Department on Friday, giving us the May new job report. And then, of course, on Thursday, we get the weekly claims for state unemployment benefits, so that, too, will be watched carefully. And again, next week, we're going to have members of the Federal Reserve on the road. They'll be talking again next week, and every word will be looked at by traders on Wall Street. Still getting some interesting earnings reports. Michael Kors Holdings reports fourth quarter results on Wednesday. Now, that's the company that makes the expensive handbags, but Kors has lost some of its affordable luxury positioning due to over-distribution that forced the company to offer heavy discounts. Mining equipment maker Joy Global, which gets about 60% of its revenue from coal miners, is expected to report a decline in second quarter profit. Shares of Tribune Publishing in Chicago will vote Thursday at their annual meeting as Gannett Company presses on with its takeover bid. Gannett has urged Tribune shareholders to withhold votes for the election of Tribune's directors, sending a message that investors want to take the $15 per share offer. Of course, we're in Chicago for this and all of our other reports, and as a matter of fact, our offices and our broadcast studios are located in the Tribune Tower. So who knows what could happen? We could lose our home on North Michigan Avenue. A couple of other stories. We do keep an eye on the earnings report of Tiffany's, and that report came in this week, and it wasn't all that good. Tiffany reported its biggest drop in quarterly sales since the peak of the global financial crisis. Again, here's the story on we are in a global economy. Our strong dollar discouraged tourists from buying Tiffany's high-end jewelry, and it eroded revenue from markets outside the United States. So Tiffany, the luxury jewelry store, didn't do as well as a lot of people would have liked. And speaking of another company that's not doing well on the phone business, Microsoft announced more big cuts to its smartphone business this week, just 2 years after it bought handset maker Nokia in an ill-fated attempt to take on market leaders Apple and Samsung. Well, the commodity world could be a different world than we thought a month or two ago, and Max Armstrong is going to discuss that with a very respected market analyst in the grain trade, David Hightower of the Hightower Reports. You'll hear that when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
David Hightower, Hightower Report, joining us in the studio here. In the midst of a continuing soybean market rally. Hasn't stopped yet.
Well, it's surprising because the market's at a juncture now where we're going to decide, is this an all-year event or is it just a pre-planting, pre-growing season volatility?
Is it one principal factor at work here, or are there several things coming into play at one time? And by that, I mean, how much of it is the shortfall of the Argentine soybean crop due to the excessive rains they had in April?
Well, I think that's one part of it. We started in March where we had a broad-based deflationary commodity prices are going to zero. The world economy's in trouble. The dollar's ultra strong, all these items. And then we found out that, guess what, it's not as bad as all that. So we saw a bounce in commodities, largely led by the $15, $20 rally in crude oil. So that's part of it. Then you nick some out of supply and you change the balance sheet in soybeans from a record ending stocks to perhaps even maybe a very tight pipeline supply. So that's a night and day shift.
Crude oil did go back up over $50 a barrel this week, and that is part of the overall psychology, is it not, lifting the tide for all commodities? Well, not all, but many of them.
Well, it is, and now we're trying to decide, do we have $30, $40, or $50 oil? And if you look beneath the read between the lines, you find out that the daily production has now been down something like 7 out of 10 weeks. Daily oil production down around 8.8 million barrels per day is a point at which we start to discharge. Now, we got a huge amount of storage in Cushing that's full, but we're also probably going to see in the next 2 weeks record implied gasoline demand. So here we are back to peak oil, and my point, I think, is that we can't keep it at 45. We have to be north of $50.
How sustainable is this grain market rally without some kind of a serious weather development in the United States? By that, I mean, here we are. Corn planting was a little bit disrupted after a fast start. Soybean planting, you know, it's with fits and starts in some places. Nevertheless, we're very close to the normal progress on both corn and soybeans. Will this rally start to fall apart if there aren't some weather problems in the U.S.?
I think the rally might slow, but I don't think the price structure will fall back. We're starting to learn now that we're not the all-dominating force because we've nicked the corn crop in Brazil. We've seen production come out in South America on soybeans. We've seen the palm oil production in Indonesia decline perhaps by 5%. So we've already seen an El Nino actual impact. And so that changed the balance sheet. So maybe we don't continue higher. But I don't think we're going to go back to those deflated levels we had in March.
Change the balance sheet. How narrow is that margin becoming on soybeans in your mind?
Well, if you take really robust demand projections and take fairly high yields and the appropriate acres that we think we're going to have in this next report, you could be as low as 150 million bushels. So we're down from four times that just 5 months ago. So I don't know if the demand will be that strong, but that's a tight market. That's not a bear market scenario.
That's under what you consider, quote, pipeline supplies, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, and over the last 15 years, we've seen so many years where you had a record pipeline expectation, then a record shortage, and then back to a record surplus. So this is not unusual.
We always have to talk about China when we're talking about the demand, but there are others who have stepped up, have there not? There have been those who have said we need to make sure we have coverage, and so the demand has been more robust than expected.
Right, and I think it's from old hands. I think it's from people in the U.S. that did not cover because of the overtly bearish outlook that we had. They were going to go hand to mouth. And so now they don't want to risk actually seeing a transition from El Nino to La Nina, because if that happens and we do have August, a lot of August dry weather has been thrown into the market. Now that could come back out, that pricing. But they were short bought.
What's your view of that late summer period and the weather projections and the people upon whom you rely for weather input? What's your view of the vulnerability of this crop to a weather problem later on in that July and especially August time frame for the bean crop?
Well, you know, we have not seen that kind of adversity. We had too much rain, but we really haven't got into the point where we had dry conditions for the past 4 or 5 years. And so you can't take the shift from El Nino to La Nina without some credibility. So they're learning more and more about that every year, and so the predictions are that it's going to get hot. And so I think the law of averages applies. We have not really had a hot August for a long period of time, and you like to think that averages average out. And if you had cold and wet early, there's a lot of history that shows that that can translate into hot and dry later.
What do you say to the person who says, you know, we've watched August many times through the years, and you don't have to have a lot of rain in August to make a huge difference in the bean crop. Timing is crucial.
Well, and particularly the oil formation in the bean, and that's to me, that's the most credible bull market within the grain complex is bean oil. Bean oil is 1/6, 1/7 of the palm production in the world, and we've already had a significant reduction in palm output. Now, to turn around and rely on the bean oil market from that, there's just not enough there. There's not enough bean oil, canola, rapeseed oil, cottonseed oil. You can't make up the shortage in palm oil. So we don't need much of a weather adversity in August to make the oil market lead the soybean complex higher.
I'm trying to find something bearish from you here, David. Let's talk about China for just a moment and their credit situation over there, the hand-wringing over their internal economic problem, banking industry concerns over there. Is there anything in China that holds vulnerability for this soybean market, given the fact that they make up such a huge part of the global demand for our beans?
Well, that's all credible worries about the financial side of it. But I would counter with the realization that China continues to go out, 20 billion purchases, Syngenta, Smithfield. They bought a robotics firm in the last 2 weeks. So they are crazy like a fox. They are purchasing the technology to stimulate their economy going forward, and they're going to take that technology and be 10, 15 years ahead of where they would have been otherwise. So keep in mind, we owe $16 trillion in U.S., they have $16 trillion in currency and assets. So even though their balance sheets show a lot of debt, to me, they're in really good shape.
We hear about their purchases falling off dramatically for things like coal and iron ore. But commodities can't be viewed equally, can they? I mean, when it comes to food, it's a different scenario for China, is it not, David?
Well, it is, and you have to be careful looking at those numbers because they are strategically managing what it is they have to buy. And so you need to look at the year-to-date as opposed to this month versus year ago. They publish a lot of stats that are versus year ago. And when you look at one timing of a month, they buy it, and the next year they don't buy it in the same month. So you got to be careful in what I see. Record sales of SUVs. I mean, how can a high-ticket item like that be being pulled off the shelf if there's not a good economy?
Taking a look at the opportunities for United States farmers this summer, we've really changed the dynamics. I mean, the grower still must be very astute in marketing, but boy, there are going to be some great opportunities, are there not?
Well, and the thing is, you got to act. You know, I can sit here and give you my opinion that I think corn has a very solid value, 10 and 15 cents under the market, and perhaps you don't really need to hedge corn. But beans, a whole different story. The soybean market is pricing demand. It's going to be hyper volatile. When you get at $10.50 and $11, you did not think you were going to get that this year. So what does it hurt to buy a put? Go out and buy a put. Don't wait till you think that the fundamentals have changed and the market's now fearful of going down. Hedging means you never have to say sorry. You know, so get out there and do something. So what? You want that put to expire worthless if you're going to get a dollar more for your beans.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. It's always great to see you.
Thank you.
David Hightower, The Hightower Report.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We are just days away from June Dairy Month, one of my favorite food promotions of the year, but there's more going on in June than the salute to the dairy industry. We have the World Pork Expo at the Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines on the 8th of June through the 10th of June. And then June 22nd to 23rd, the Boone home of the Farm Progress Show will be home to the World Hay and Forage Expo. And so in our studio this week, Matt Youngman, who is the Director of Special Events for Penton Agriculture and who has been with the company for 21 years, putting on Farm Progress and Husker Harvest and all of that. Well, he sat down to talk about the World Hay and Forage Expo coming up later in June. And Max talked to him about the location and the fact that it'll be in Iowa again this year, and, they've been there before.
Yeah, this will be our third pass through Central Iowa Expo as the host facility for Hay Expo. And the thing that's exciting about that is it allows the exhibitors to do a better job rather than when we're out in a hay field down a gravel road somewhere, you know, there's no internet, there's no electricity, there's obviously no paved roads or any of that kind of thing. So when you have that at Central Iowa Expo, the exhibitors can really do a nice job of putting their exhibits together. And it fits naturally with using what are typically the parking lots during Farm Progress Show. That's a perfectly good field of alfalfa that we can go out and run field demonstrations on that parking lot area. So it fits well, gives the exhibitors a good place to put up the exhibits. And, you know, you never know what Mother Nature's going to throw at us in the middle of June, towards the end of June. So having storm sewer drainage and hard surface roads, it just makes it a more comfortable experience for the visitor.
Helps weatherproof you a little bit compared to being out on a farm somewhere in Minnesota or Wisconsin or Northeast Iowa, where it's not quite as protected from those heavy rains of which you speak.
Yeah, you know, we have permanent buildings. Our office will be in the Morton building, and you know, we've all been through, anybody who's been to a couple of hay expos has been to one where it's been awful wet and really tough to get around. So having those paved roads and that storm sewer and all those things that make the facility so nice, really real nice amenities, permanent restrooms, you know, all those kind of things that make it a more comfortable show to visit.
Let me ask you about something before we get into more of the mechanics of the show. When you have a dairy market under pressure the way it is now, and milk producers are in kind of a tough situation, especially given the fact that grain prices have bumped up, does that diminish the interest in making good quality hay, or does it underscore their need to make sure they've got the best forage they have and that they're bringing the highest efficiency they can possibly get to the production of milk?
Well, I think whether we're talking about irrigation at Husker Harvest Days or corn and soybean production at Farm Progress Show or quality hay production at the Hay Expo, all these trade shows are about exactly what you're talking about, and that is giving the grower the opportunity to learn about what is the new technology, what are the new tools, what's the new equipment that's going to make me more profitable. So I think it's just as valuable, if not more valuable, in a down dairy economy to come to an event like this, come to a trade show like this, and learn about what's going to make you that extra nickel that's going to help make everything flow well for your family farm.
What about folks who produce for the equine market? Will you find some of them as well at Hay Expo, who really try to serve that market, again, where there's quite an interest in quality forage?
Well, yes. You know, you look at, you know, when we're trying to have a Hay and Forage Expo, you would think about dairy farmers, you'd think about equine, you'd think about cow-calf producers, you know, any sort of forages that need to be produced. You know, we have small square bale accumulators for the equine market, you know, big squares, big rounds, all those kind of things in the baling demonstrations. But it kind of runs the gamut from dairy through to equine to cow-calf that all of this equipment has its application for each one of those folks.
It really is a good central spot to see all of the haying equipment, isn't it? I mean, you could wind up running a lot of different places to see the variety. I mean, from tedders to windrowers, you'd run yourself to death.
You would, and you know, that's kind of the beauty that place. Really, that exhibit field empties when those field demonstrations start, because I don't know of very many places that you can go. If you're in the market to buy, let's say, a mower conditioner, there are very few places you can go and watch 15 or 20 mower conditioners run side by side, one after the other, in the exact same conditions. And so it's a pretty tremendous buying opportunity, or, you know, shopping opportunity, and compare, because you may not necessarily have a, you know, a Vermeer dealer nearby or a Kuhn dealer nearby or anything like that. But you really want to take a look at what that equipment can do, you know, a Krohn dealer nearby. But, you know, you've heard that maybe they've got a piece of equipment that would be good for you. This is a chance to go and actually see it run.
The size of the dairy farms that have been built in our region over the past decade or so, it's rather impressive. But they have very large forage demands, don't they? I mean, when you get into the summer and you go down the road and you see what's happening out in some of these fields in terms of bringing in the silage and forage, there are some big machines that are operating out there.
Yeah, you know, as a kind of a corn and soybean guy, to see these big machines run, you know, the we're not going to run choppers, but there will be choppers there on display. And, you know, you're talking about some of these are approaching 1,000 horsepower. They are massive machines, and they're very impressive to see run. And you know, even 45 feet of hay cut in one pass with three mounted sickle mowers or disc mowers is really, really an impressive sight to see. You know, just as impressive as seeing combines run at Husker Harvest Days.
Our thanks to Matt Youngman, and we wish for good weather late in June for that Hay and Forage Expo. That will be in Boone, Iowa, at the site of the Farm Progress Show that will be held the end of August and the first day of September. So, remember, the markets are closed Monday, so where will we start on Tuesday? Well, this market that David Hightower discussed with Max indeed is looking better than a lot of people thought it would. Corn futures today rose about 1%, taking corn to the highest price level in 10 months on strong export demand and short covering ahead of the long holiday weekend. Soybean futures also climbed, although soybean meal futures declined, and then wheat futures closed a little changed after matching last week's high. So where do we start the trade on Tuesday morning? July wheat will start at $4.81 a bushel after losing just half a cent today. July corn, though, will start Tuesday morning at $4.12 3/4, gaining a nickel a bushel today. And December corn gained 4 cents today, so it will start Tuesday morning at $4.13 1/2. Soybeans had some pretty good ups and downs this week, but more ups than downs, really, when you take a look at it. But at the end of the week today, the July contract stood at $10.86 1/2 after gaining 7 1/2 cents in the trade today. And new crop November gained 6 1/2 cents today, so it will start the trade on Tuesday at $10.56 1/4 cents a bushel. Have any of you noticed, really, that after that report in March on planting intentions, what has happened to corn? We're over the $4 mark. Beans are over the $10 mark. Not a bad rally going into the crop year. Now, let's take a look at livestock. Cattle, I tell you, they just continue to struggle in this market. In Arizona last week, I spent some time on the W. Dart Ranch, owned by Andy Grossetta and his family in Cottonwood, and he was finishing up branding, I think, about 400 calves that were born in his herd this spring. And he's looking at those calves saying, I wonder what they're going to be worth the way this market is going. Well, as we heard this week, the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, is going to take a look at the volatility in the cattle market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and see if the fast trading and the high volume trade is not doing the cattle industry all that well in trying to determine prices. So as we look at live cattle today, gained for the second straight session, rising on technical buying and the hope that meat demand would increase during the summer grilling season. And looking at where those cattle prices ended the day today, the nearby cattle contract, June, ended at $119.70 after gaining 77. And the August feeder cattle contract gained $1.07 to close at $146.47. Meanwhile, August hogs will start Tuesday at $80.85 a hundredweight after going up just a dime today. Remember the meaning of Memorial Day. Have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.